Blog Talk Radio.
Infinite Universe in beautiful, just off the river, Wheatland, Missouri. And my topic tonight is going to be unity and diversity. How do we celebrate the oneness with our eyes wide open? And when we speak about oneness, when we speak about unity, when we speak about love and all that nice, warm, fuzzy, fluffy bunny kind of stuff, we can fall into the trap of what's been called the fluffy bunny syndrome, of just overlooking the differences that exist between us and just trying to preach and talk about the wonders of love and unity and oneness, and at the same time casting a blind eye to the definite divisions and hardships and bitterness and rivalries which do exist within our world today. And it's kind of like we have a kind of good news, bad news kind of thing where, you know, it is true we are all, you know, beings created by the same supernatural source, and at a very deep level we are brothers and sisters. But at the same time, it is also equally true that we are not completely open to that oneness. Not all of us are aware of our inner unity. And we do have divisions on scales of, you know, nationality, ethnicity, religious differences, differences of opinion. All kinds of differences which legitimately exist. And so to me that raises the question, how do we openly and honestly speak of unity and oneness while at the same time recognizing the diversity but not getting overwhelmed by the diversity? How do we acknowledge both? And I've got 3 points here that I'd like to discuss throughout the course of this broadcast. First point is that we must acknowledge that differences exist. We must respect those differences, celebrate those differences, but not be defined by those differences. And I'll get into more depth on that later. We must allow other people to be themselves and not insist that they be just like us in order to fellowship with us. You know, a lot of times Christians will reach out to other Christians and they'll get along fairly well up to a point until some differences of doctrine or differences of opinions flare up, and then they can be quite divided. And the same can be said of Muslims, Buddhists, Hindus. You know, it seems like people that belong to the same religious organization or spiritual path should get along fairly well with one another, but, you know, if they're like us to a certain point, we can accept that. But then sometimes when differences flare up, that can really tear the whole thing apart. So we must be careful to allow other people to be themselves and not insist that they be just like us in order to have fellowship with us. And my third point, we must ultimately recognize that unity and oneness is the reality and not the goal. You know, going through my life, the first, probably the first 40 years of my life, I always thought of unity and oneness as being the ultimate goal of our human experience. And it wasn't until just a few years ago, really, that I stumbled across some teachings that suggested that, well, didn't suggest, just came right out and stated it, that unity and oneness is the reality. It's just that we are not all awake and aware of that reality. And to illustrate that point, I have a story, a parable, of a cranky old man and a beggar. Now, one day, this cranky old man, well, perhaps not that cranky and not really that old either, he was coming home from work. And a man came up on his doorstep. And this other man, a beggar, knocked at this older man's door. And this older man opened the door. And obviously, the beggar had caught this man on a bad day because he did not want to be disturbed. He looked at the beggar, all dirty, in shabby clothes, and saw that the beggar was wanting a handout, you know, needing some help, wanting some help, food, maybe a place to stay the night. And this cranky old man just let him have it. Said, you know, I am not made of money. I have to work hard for what I have. Sometimes I'm lucky just to pay the rent. So, you know, you can take your tale of woe and take it someplace else. I don't want to hear it. And slammed the door in the beggar's face. And the beggar went off to the next home and knocked on the door asking for help and was meeting with much the same response at the next-door neighbors. And as this first man that the beggar, you know, knocked the door of, was looking out the window, kind of watching the beggar's progress, he saw a police car come up and place this beggar under arrest. You see, this community had a anti-panhandling law in effect, as several communities in our great nation do at this point in time. And it's illegal in that area for people to go door-to-door knocking, asking for help. And so the police took this beggar away. And this cranky old man just looked out the window, smiling, and thought to himself, well, now that takes care of him. That beggar is going to get what he deserves. And the older man is just going through the rest of his night, messing around, when all of a sudden his telephone rings. And he picks up the phone and finds that it's the police. And the police say, "Sir, Mr. Johnson, you remember that report you filed about 20 years ago about your son who had gone missing? Well, this beggar that we ran in, we took his fingerprints, we ran his fingerprints through the database, and I really think you should get down here right away because we believe that this beggar is actually your son." And at that, the formerly cranky old man who turned the beggar away at his doorstep could not believe his ears. He hung up the phone, got in his car, drove down to the police station, got to know this old beggar who turns out to be his son, kind of reestablishes a relationship, finds out to his amazement that this beggar whom he had turned away at his doorstep was actually his son, who disappeared 20 years earlier. Seems his son had been involved in some sort of an accident, had lost his memory, suffered amnesia, and went through the rest of that 20-year period just wandering in a daze, going door to door, not knowing exactly who he was or where he was, but knowing that he needed help and was hoping that people would open their door to him and help him out in any way he could. And so this man and this long-lost son who had turned beggar reestablished a relationship and just got to know one another better. And the man who thought he had lost a son 20 years ago found out that his son was still alive and was with him. Now, as I tell that story, in the beginning, the cranky old man, he had nothing but anger for the beggar who was knocking at his door. And we might ask ourselves the question, what changes in this story? What changes with the older man's perspective of things? When he thought that the man knocking on his door, standing on his doorstep, was just somebody who was looking for a handout, no kith or kin, you know, to him whatsoever, he treated him badly. I mean, without compassion, without any kind of, love in his heart, just treated him like a nuisance, an inconvenience, a threat. You know, get out of here. I don't want to have anything to do with you. But then, when it was discovered that this beggar was actually his son, his entire attitude changes. You know, this is not a shabby old beggar anymore. This is my son who was lost and now has been found. And we can take that story and we can apply that not just to this fictional story of a father and son reunited after 20 years. We can take this story and apply it to us. Because we go through our life thinking that we are individuals, separate from everybody else and separate from everything else, and that some people that we travel through this world with are our family and we love them, or members of our spiritual community and we love them. Sometimes they get on our nerves, but you know, we love them. And other people are strangers. Potentially, possibly friends, potentially, possibly enemies, folks who are strangers, maybe out to get us, who knows? And sometimes we feel threatened by those that we feel separated from. But at a root level, we all descend from the same divine source. At a deeper level, at the deepest level that we can imagine, we are all brothers and sisters, you know, children of a common source. And this realization has been spoken of beautifully in some prayers. The one I have in mind right now is the Our Father who art in heaven. There was one man that said his entire religion revolved around those first few words in the Lord's Prayer. Our Father. And if we acknowledge that we are all brothers and sisters, then we also have to acknowledge that every war ever fought on this planet between humans has been a civil war, with brother fighting against brother, sister against sister, father against son, mother against daughter, and so on and so forth, that we are not separate nations divided against one another, that at our deepest level, we are one family in the divine source. But this takes a raising of consciousness that most people don't have. And just like the cranky old man dealing with the beggar, at first he couldn't see that that beggar was his son. But then when it was explained to him using science and fingerprints and a police detective, the man believed the story and was happy. But he had to have his consciousness raised first. He had to have it brought to his awareness that this was family. And we're very much the same way. I'm going to take a break and play a song by Artemis, Begin Again, and I will continue on with this thought. Pretty much like the man in the story that I told just a few minutes ago, we have to raise our awareness of what's really going on around us. We have to raise our consciousness. Most people, many of us, go through this world with an awareness of fear, of hardship, of threats, and we interact with the world using that lower energy of fear. And it's not really until we begin to approach things from the higher level of love that we can begin to see the unity, that we can begin to see the oneness, even in the midst of the struggles and the hardships and the battles and the wars which seem to surround us in this world in which we live. And how do we raise our consciousness? How do we extend our awareness to accept the higher truth that we are all one despite all the outer differences? And the best way that I can think of is through the practice of meditation. If we practice meditation for a few hours each day, or at least 20 minutes a day, we begin to see how everything is connected. It's not something that happens immediately. It takes time. You know, a person can meditate for several months before they begin to perhaps get a sense of the oneness of all things and the unity of all things and how everything is connected. But it will come eventually. If a person finds a practice of meditation that they're comfortable with, a practice that works for them, and if they stay with it, if they keep with it. And it does take time, and some people, I mean, if we want immediate results, and if we're the kind of idealistic, visionary person that wants to go out there and change the world immediately, you know, we want results by lunchtime next Tuesday, not 6 months down the line, and then we'll wait and see how much progress we've made. But with meditation, it does take time, and we have to be patient. We have to be patient with our own progress in the practice, and we have to be patient with other people, because these things don't happen overnight. Sometimes we may have a revelation or an aha moment in which all of a sudden everything makes sense. But that sudden moment of realization isn't something that just happened. It's a seed which was planted months or years previously and took time to grow in our subconscious and took time to germinate and to flower into that realization that suddenly came forth. But it takes time, but it is a worthwhile practice to get into. And if we're faithful to the practice of meditation, we will discover that not only can we raise our own level of consciousness and our own energy with meditation, but we can also contribute to the raise of energy in the people around us. Now, I was listening to a talk by Wayne Dyer just this morning, in which he was giving a radio interview with Whitley Strieber, and the topic was how to have conscious contact with God. And he was talking about meditation to raise your awareness and to connect with the divine as you understand the divine. And everything he was saying was making perfect sense to me. I'd heard a lot of it before. But then he said something that I knew intuitively, but I'd never really heard it expressed that way before. And he was speaking of a clinical study in which the brain chemistry of folks that were practicing meditation was studied. And the researchers were saying that once a person practiced meditation, that their positive brain chemicals increased, you know, resulting in less stress and greater serenity. And I fully expected that. That did not surprise me. But this study went one step further. Not only did they test the brain chemistry of the folks who were meditating, they also took into account the people who were around those people, you know, their friends, their family members, people who did not practice meditation themselves, but were in close proximity to these other folks who were practicing meditation. And they asked these people to come into the study, and they made tests of their brain chemistry. And they found out that not only did the practice of meditation raise the positive energy of the practitioner, it also raised the positive energy of the people who were close around those practitioners. And this reminded me of a story that was told by Ajahn Brahm about a lady who was coming to his meditation retreats. And there was one day when this lady was just, she felt so overwhelmed that she just couldn't take the time out of her day to go down to the meditation studio and spend an hour in meditation. And this lady was flustered and frustrated. And you know the old story, when mama ain't happy, nobody's happy. And this lady had a daughter. And this daughter said, "Mommy, please go to your meditation practice." And the woman looked at her daughter and asked, "Well, why, honey? I mean, I have so much here to do. I can't take time out for that." And the daughter just looked at her mother and said, "Mommy, you're such a better mommy when you go to your meditation practice. Please go to your meditation practice." And so the mother just dropped everything, decided she was going to make the time. She went to her meditation practice and came back home a better human being and a much better mommy. But I never really made that connection between that story and the observation that Wayne Dyer made with the study involving meditation practitioners and the people around them. You know, not only do the people around us benefit through our practice of meditation because we're kinder, gentler, more compassionate people, but we also share an energy. You see, we human beings are not fully self-contained. We radiate energy from our chakras. You know, one of the most powerful ones is the heart chakra. And when we're feeling positive energy, that energy can be felt by other people. It's usually felt on a subconscious level. Like, you know, I've had experiences where I go into a place of work, and one job I had was on an assembly line, and I'd go in feeling great, feeling good, and then I'd notice that someone at the head of the line would be in a bad mood. And then that mood would jump from one person to another. And one day I was amazed. I could literally see it working its way down the line as the guy that started this bad mood out at the head of the line just transferred this negative energy unconsciously to the people working next to him, and then it went from them to the people next to them and so on and so forth until it got down to me and I felt it. And previously I was feeling great, and all of a sudden I was tired and cranky and just wanting to get home. But, you know, we do. We exchange energy. And we're so used to thinking of ourselves as physical beings, you know, self-contained in our bodies of flesh and bone and blood. But we're also, at a much deeper level, energetic beings. And when we're feeling, cultivating positive feelings, positive energy, the higher energy of love, we allow that to radiate out and to influence other people. But when we focus on the lower energy of fear, we likewise radiate that out. And so if we're faithful to a practice of meditation, you know, we can be aware that not only are we doing this to benefit ourselves, we're also doing that to benefit other people around us. And through the practice of meditation, or in whatever manner that may take, whatever form that may take, we let our light shine that other people may see that light and be illuminated by that light. And when we don't, when we fall short on that, when our light becomes darkness, then that darkness also flows out from us and influences other people. Now, there's a gospel verse, "Let your light shine before men that they may see the good that you do and give glory to God." And in that same passage, Jesus asks the question, "But if your light inside of you is darkness, how great is that darkness?" And as a youngster, that never made any sense to me. But now, looking at it from the point of view of love and fear, with love representing light and fear representing darkness, you know, it makes perfect sense. If your basic energy level within you is based on fear, then you're cultivating darkness within. But if you're working on overcoming that darkness, transforming it into the higher energy of love by raising your awareness through a steady and faithful spiritual practice, then you have light inside of you. And how great is that light? How great it can be. But it takes work. But, you know, it's worthwhile. It takes work and it takes time. But once we get it, we can automatically, without even thinking about it, share it with those around us. I'm going to take another break and play a song, "Creation" by Artemis.
Stretch down, little three child.
Okay, now that said about unity and celebrating the oneness and awakening to the oneness, you know, that's all well and good, but I'm going to return to my first point now, because not everybody is aware of the oneness. And not everybody, you know, relates to the oneness. They will relate more to the differences that exist rather than the oneness. And so we must acknowledge, you know, that those differences exist. To us, they may not be that important, but, you know, they exist. They're there, and they mean something. And they're there so we can learn from them. So we must acknowledge that differences exist. We must respect those differences. And I would say celebrate those differences. You know, if everybody in this world were exactly alike, just the same, you know, what a dull and boring world this would be. But because of these differences, you know, we have wide variety in this world, you know, a variety of cultures, a variety of different people, different points of views, just viva la difference. So celebrate those differences. But at the same time, not allow ourselves to be defined by those differences and not define others by those differences. We must acknowledge that we are more than just our outer physical appearance or our sex or our ethnicity or, you know, what have you. You know, looking back at myself, you know, there's a time I identified as a young, white, Roman Catholic growing up in a rather affluent neighborhood, middle class, middle income kind of a guy. And people would ask me, you know, who I was, and I would give, you know, a description kind of based on that. Well, yeah, I work at a grocery store. I do this, that, the other thing. And I would try to define myself by my physical attributes and what I did. And then this one guy that just liked to press me to look deeper would look at me and say, "But is that who you really are?" And it made me stop and think. Here I was defining myself by what I looked like, the color of my skin, the fact that I was a man, worked at a grocery store, you know, what I did. And this man was asking me to think more deeply. You know, you're more than who you are physically. You're more than just what you do. You're more than just a job. You're more than just an occupation. And I would say at your deepest level, you are divine love, wrapped in material flesh and blood, having a human experience. And we must acknowledge that human experience, acknowledge, you know, our ethnicities, acknowledge our different points of view, and celebrate them, but at the same time, encourage ourselves and others to look more deeply. You know, we're more than just our story. You know, we're more than just our race. We're more than just our religion. You know, here at Temple of the Infinite Universe, we are an interfaith spiritual outreach that, you know, we're dedicated to promoting peace, harmony, and understanding between peoples of different religions and different spiritual walks and backgrounds and ethnicities. But, you know, here we can easily fall into a trap, and that's a trap of collecting people. You know, part of my goal here at Temple of the Infinite Universe is to collect scriptures from all different spiritual traditions, you know, Christian, Muslim, Jewish. I've got Bibles of, you know, many different translations of the Bible. I've got the Torah. I've got two different copies of the Bhagavad Gita. I have the Mahabharata. I've got a few books on Wicca and neo-paganism. And, you know, I've been collecting scriptures, but, you know, I can easily fall into the trap of wanting to collect people. You know, having a thought process like, you know, we're an interfaith temple, you know, we've got a couple Christians, we got a few Jews, we got a few Muslims. Now we really need to go out there and recruit some Buddhists, you know, and just go about defining people by their spiritual walk and not seeing them for the people they are. You know, collecting people based on those differences. And, you know, I've run across a few organizations before that were based on wanting to promote, you know, unity and harmony between people of different ethnic groups. And this one group I became familiar with was wanting to recruit this one guy because he was Korean. And he just looked at him and he said, "I don't want to be part of your diversity. You know, I just want to be me. You're collecting me because I'm Korean. You're not after me because I'm, you know, Paul Chow or whatever his name was. You know, you're after me because of my ethnicity. And I'm so much more than that. You know, I don't want to be part of your propaganda. When you can come back and see me as a human being, then we can talk." And, you know, when we're with organizations that want to try to build unity, to create unity, you know, we can go about the process of, make the mistake of trying to collect people based on their different backgrounds and the color of their skin or what have you. But when we recognize that unity and oneness is not the ultimate goal, but rather that that is the reality, that we have common ground, we have a common spirit of love that we can access, that we can relate one another, you know, with one another with, you know, then we realize that, you know, we're not about building unity out of diversity. We're just enjoying the diversity while at the same time sharing in that oneness, sharing that love. A positive example of this is Mahatma Gandhi when he was building an ashram in India, when he was working for gaining independence from Great Britain for his beloved India. He wanted to explore the idea of nonviolence and the force of love, truth force. He called it Satyagraha. And he built up a community where it was going to be an experimental community where folks would come and join this ashram just to experiment with the force of truth and the force of love. And, of course, in order for this experiment to work well, it would take different people from different backgrounds. But when Gandhi built this ashram, he didn't sit down with his followers and say, "Okay, we need Jews, we need Hindus, you know, we need Christians, we need some Muslims, so I want you to go out there and just get me binders full of Muslims and bring them in because we're running short now. So, you know, bring them, hop to it. You know, we need to collect people." No, he didn't do it that way. He motivated people out of love, telling them, "Okay, we are going to experiment with the greatest force humanity will ever know, and that is the force of love. And we are going to live together in this community, all of us, and we are going to experiment with that truth, with that love, and we're going to grow in it, and we are going to grow from this experiment. And then we are going to take what we learn here in this small community and share it with the wider world. And so he wasn't worried about collecting Hindus and Christians and Jews and Muslims. He was interested in gathering together people of goodwill, people who could be motivated out of love and who could be given a higher level of awareness, where they would come in perhaps thinking of themselves as Hindu or Christian or Muslim or Jew, but would later, through the course of this experiment, come to realize that they were divine love and light, enfleshed in a human body, and would learn to relate to other people as divine love enfleshed in human body. But again, this awareness, this development, did not occur overnight. It takes time. And we may have that awareness that we are all spiritual beings descended from a common divine source, having an earthly adventure, but other of our people that we engage with may not. They may not be to that level of awareness of love. They may be very well stuck in the lower energy of fear. And so, you know, I can use an example of a soldier on a battlefield who's facing another enemy soldier on that same battlefield, and he suddenly feels an overwhelming sense of love. You know, would it be proper for that soldier to throw down his weapon and run up to the enemy soldier and try to hug him and say, "Hey, I love you, and I'm so sorry I tried shooting at you the other day. I just didn't realize that we are brothers." You know, you don't see that happening because, well, for the first, number one reason, it's a good way to get shot, because we're not all on that same level of awareness, but we can help bring one another to that same level of awareness. So yes, we must acknowledge that there are differences and acknowledge that sometimes those differences are really going to get under our skin, but that's okay. We can respect those differences. We can agree to disagree. We can celebrate them. But at the same time, do not let yourself be defined by those differences. And don't allow yourself to define other people by those differences. Because the differences, we are that, but we are so much more. And when we go about engaging with other people, trying to experiment with love like Gandhi did, and celebrate the oneness and the unity, you know, we must be who we are, feel the freedom to be ourselves, and allow other people the freedom to be themselves. We are not carbon copies one of another. And, you know, just because other people's differences irritate us does not give us the right to ask that person to stop being who they are. You know, I have a cousin who is kind of, I won't say the black sheep of the family, but she's definitely the weird sheep of the family. She's had a spiritual walk that has just gone all over the globe, it seems. You know, in her younger days, when she was a teenager, she was a member of a ashram. I don't know what outfit it was, but kind of a Hindu sect that she belonged to. And then she met a Jewish guy and married him and became Jewish. And then she went from that to divorce that guy and got involved in Wicca and paganism. And right now she's kind of ostracized by some members of the family because she is a high-level practicing witch. And that scares the heck out of some people. You know, it used to scare the heck out of me until I got to know a few witches And now I think it's fine. You know, that's how you relate to God, Goddess, the divine. That's great, whatever works for you. But, you know, we don't always give other people the freedom to be themselves, especially when they are something which we may feel threatened by, or, you know, they're experimenting with something that we think is dangerous, or something that we have been raised to believe is dangerous. But, you know, if we take a closer, deeper look at it, sometimes we find out that, hey, all the hype that we were raised with about this isn't necessarily true. You know, this is a legitimate spiritual path, one that we should respect, one that we can learn from. And so we must give people the permission to be who they are, authentically let them be who they are, and authentically let us be who we are, and meet together on common ground and learn from one another, and not insist that, you know, we all have to be the same, that we all have to come out of the same mold and have the same points of view and the same opinions. You know, what a boring world it would be if we all had the same opinions and all the same experiences. But yeah, if we're going to come together with other people from other faiths, from other walks, you know, we have to realize that these other people, they have their differences, and that is great. But we also have a great commonality, and that great commonality is, at our deepest inner core, we are all made up of divine love, divine energy. We are all one family in the divine source. A family that has its differences, has its disagreements, has been at war one with another for many, many millennia. But we have been learning from these conflicts. We have been learning from our mistakes, and we can grow in awareness until we finally realize how one we really are. Going to take another break, play a song, Down by the River by Artemis, and then I'll wrap this up. Okay, we're rapidly running out of time, so I'm just going to say that this broadcast is brought to you by Temple of the Infinite Universe Incorporated, an interfaith spiritual outreach in Wheatland, Missouri. If you'd like to learn more about our organization, feel free to visit our website, www.hermetictemple.com. I will be coming back at you this Thursday at 6 p.m., and our topic will be finding your own inner teacher. And until then, you know, recognize that peace, love, unity, it's who we are. It's the reality that we live in at a higher level. But diversity is a reality, and division is a reality. They're all realities we have to work through and deal with and learn from. So let's not try to shove one under the carpet in order to embrace the other. Let us embrace everything and learn our lessons with joy. Ralph, wishing you a pleasant evening of discovery.